Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award winning Niall Boylan Show.
Dr. Gary Lewandowski is an American psychologist and author and professor at Monmouth University. His articles have been viewed over 4 million times. And his TED Talks, Breakups Don't Have to Leave You Broken, have been viewed over 2.1 million times. And he's written articles on various topics ranging from the 4-hour relationship. I'm sure many people have had them. Should you break up with your partner? And now he is on the line live from New York to answer your questions. Gary, good afternoon to you.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks
good.
For having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. You're so welcome, by the way. And I have to say, great success, by the way, particularly in your TED Talks. I mean, that's been viewed 2.1 million times. That must give you some sort of sense of people are listening.
It's fantastic, particularly because the topic is about how to help people overcome the despair of breakup. And so to think that I'm helping people get over a really tough life situation is really encouraging.
Well, look, we've asked our listeners to send in questions today, and they're going to do that. But before I do that, I suppose relationships is probably the most complicated thing in our lives. We will go through probably many of them, most of us, from the age of whatever it is, 15 or 16 years of age, right up to adulthood, depending on how many times we get married or meet somebody new. So they are complicated, and they can be difficult, but there's sacrifices to be made, isn't there?
There's definitely sacrifices to be made. And, you know, part of what makes relationships complicated is we just don't get much training at all. And so, you know, for something that's one of the most important areas of our life, you would think we would spend more time learning about it, take classes in school, you know, anything of that sort. But we just really are left on our own and just kind of left to figure it out, which makes it a lot more difficult.
Yeah, the only thing we get in school is the sex education part of it, is the intimacy part of it. We don't get told about, you know, how to deal with each other's problems, how to support each other, what love actually means, what is marriage all about. We don't get to talk about those things.
Exactly. And sadly, that's all the really important parts of a relationship. It's like, you know, how much is your partner your best friend, and what to look for, what to avoid. You know, sex is a part of relationships, but it's a small part relative to all the other fulfilling aspects that relationships can bring us.
They can bring a lot of woe as well into somebody's lives, particularly if you're with the wrong type of person. Lately, there's an awful lot of talk about narcissism and people who are selfish in relationships or people who are on the level of being sociopaths. That has become a bigger problem in society, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, the way our society is, particularly with social media and how much we're encouraged to kind of lean into who we are and put ourselves out there, and people talk about having their own brand, it can really, you know, for those people with narcissistic tendencies, it can really encourage them to take it a little bit overboard, for sure.
Okay, I'm looking at some of the questions that we've already have coming into us at the moment. I love my GF, my girlfriend. We have an amazing connection and I really respect her. But we both have strong personalities. How much conflict is normal in a relationship? We always recover well. Okay, so conflict in a relationship when you've got two people who are quite dominant. So does there always have to be one person who's dominant and one who's submissive? Or can two dominant people work in a relationship?
Two dominant people can absolutely work in a relationship. I love this question because it's something I talk about in my book. People always worry that too much conflict is a bad sign. And, you know, I will say it depends on the nature of the conflict that you're having, but it's actually the fact that if relationships are having no conflict, that's a worse sign. You know, that question about, you know, we're both strong personalities, like, what would you rather have? Would you rather be with someone who has a weak personality? And so, you know, when you and your partner are equals, which is what you'd want in a relationship, you're going to have differences of opinion. The key, though, is to have frequent small conflicts, keep things, small problems small, fight fairly, don't be impulsive about it, and be a good listener. And more than anything else, when you're going to have conflict, remember that you guys are both on the same team. It's not about one of us winning, one of us losing. It's about both of us confronting the problem.
Does somebody always have to say they're sorry?
No, I don't think so. It depends on if you have something to be sorry for. It doesn't have to be, I'm sorry. It can be like, oh, now I understand, right? Because a lot of it's the misunderstanding and like kind of taking on the other person's perspective a little bit.
Okay, another one here. My husband prefers to go on holidays alone. He's an introvert and I'm not. I really feel rejected even though he goes to great lengths to reassure me. His job is very busy and he said he needs time to recover and time out on his own. How do I deal with this?
So, you know, I mean, my first response to a lot of any of these kind of problems is like, you know, the number one way to solve any problem in a relationship is communication. So assuming that they've communicated about it, you know, I'd ask the person who's asking this question, like, have you taken perspective? Like, have you seen this situation through your partner's eyes to see that, you know, maybe he really does need this? Because there might be things that you do that he just accepts. And so this might be something about your partner you need to accept. If that's still difficult, you could seek a compromise, right? You know, if he needs to go on some holidays alone, maybe you split the difference. Sometimes he goes alone, sometimes you go together, or he goes for a few days alone, and then you meet him after that. The other way to approach it might be that...
It's a bit mean, isn't it? It's a little bit mean for him to go on his own and abandon his wife when he has a bit of time off.
I mean, I don't know about mean. It's a little bit self-centered, for sure. But, you know, I think maybe that couple can find ways to do better, you know, before they have to go on holiday, so it's not so taxing on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. Okay, so he said, I've been on apps for years now, and I've never had any success, only crap dates. When do I just give up? Well, I don't think you should ever give up. Is there a point where you say I'm undateable?
No. So I don't believe that anybody's undateable, and I don't believe that, you know, there's no success to be found on these. I do believe, though, kind of going back to what we said about people don't get much training, is that people just go into the dating apps with a bunch of bad strategies. A lot of times people go in with, like, for example, like misinformed advice about, like, hide your quirks. Like, don't show anybody, like, anything that might be a little bit odd or a little bit weird. And that's the exact wrong advice. Like, you have to lean into those things, because your perfect partner is going to be the person who loves you for who you are and loves you for those little idiosyncrasies and those little aspects of weirdness. Mm-hmm. You know, and if someone's really having that much trouble, you know, there's coaching out there to help people with this stuff. The other thing is, if you do want to, like, diversify your dating portfolio, you can get off the app. You can do the app plus other things. One of the things we talk about in a coaching program I'm in is our dual intent activities. So really focus on activities that are there for mm-hmm. your own personal development, but also places where you might meet people, like, you know, classes at the gym, a hiking club, things of that sort.
Is it, I mean, I've often wondered, because I'm old school, you know, I'm kind of nearly 60 years of age. Right. And is it easier to meet people the way we did in the old days, in a bar, in a nightclub, in the candy aisle, as you would call it, candy, or the sweet aisle, in your local shopping centre when you're doing a bit of shopping? Is it easier to meet people? Were they better ways to meet people than this kind of artificial idea nowadays of online dating, where you're kind of hooking up more so? Was it better in the old way? Was the old way better?
There's pluses and minuses of both. I think one of the things we forget about the old way is it really limited our number of options. And so when we had limited options, we really were forced to try to make things work more with imperfect partners. Now with online dating, you do get a chance to more specifically match to somebody who shares your values, shares your hobbies, shares your interests, and you get to learn more about their personality. Whereas
you would think
somebody in the can.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, but you would think, Gary, that it would be better because people know what they're looking for. Whereas in the old days, as you rightly said, we were limited with our options, and we kind of just grabbed the first one we could find. But when you say that, and I completely agree with you, but yet we're seeing more breakdowns of relationships and marriages than we ever saw. So they're not lasting as long, are they?
Well, I mean, that data is actually, I mean, the data on divorce is actually that divorce rates are going down. I mean, people are getting married later because they're kind of waiting to find the right person for them, which is helping the divorce rates go down. The biggest issue, though, I think you have, though, is that it's something that you said, Niall, which is if people know what they're looking for, and that's the thing, is like people don't do a good enough job really thinking about purposefully, about intentionally, about what they're looking for.
Because, well, I know you said they're going down in America. We're kind of new to divorce in this country. When I say we're new to it, it was only legalized in 1996. And only in the last 2 years did they reduce the time. You probably wouldn't understand this, Gary. This is Ireland. But there was a time up to 2 years ago where you had to be separated for 5 years legally before you were allowed to get divorced. Now they've reduced that to 2 years. Oh. Yeah, yeah. So you had to prove you were living separate lives for 5 years. And there was no possibility of reconciliation. Anyway, speaking of reconciliation, speaking of that, somebody says, I'm obsessed with my boyfriend's ex. I stalk her social media. How do I stop? She lives in Australia and she's no threat to me. So, I mean, that's a bit weird, isn't it? Probably quite common, mind you.
I mean, I mean, I think, you know, kind of getting obsessed about certain things and stalking exes, that usually it's from jealousy. This person seems to be aware that the other person's of no threat. So what I would suggest to this person is, like, you have to get down to the why. Like, why are you doing this? And it's probably some of your own insecurities. So I would seek ways to fix that, and then this obsession would go away.
Mm, okay. People say I'm too fussy. I'm 36 and single, female. I want kids. Is it me, or should I just settle? Whatever that means.
So I would say sometimes people are right, and sometimes the people around you are going to be correct about the fact that you're being too fussy. So this person categorizes being fussy as, like, should I settle? And I would say it's not about settling. It's more about being more realistic and prioritizing what you're looking for in a relationship. Mm. One of the things I talk about in my book is, you know, people falling into this idea of perfection, and perfection is a trap. There's no such thing as a perfect partner. There's no such thing as a perfect relationship. I've been married 25 years. Like, I've been with my partner for a long time. She's not perfect. I'm not perfect. Our relationship is not perfect. But, you know, it's not about perfection. It's about progress and getting better each day.
Should she cut? Well, here's another thing in relation to that, because she says she's female, 36, and she wants kids. Maybe she's meeting people who don't want kids. Should you ever compromise and say, well, okay, okay, we won't have kids, though? Or is that something that's just going to come back to bite her?
I think it'll come back to bite her, right? Mm. If she really wants kids and that's part of who she is as a person, you don't want to sacrifice that for your relationship, and no good partner would ever want you to sacrifice that for your relationship.
Okay. Some of the questions that are coming in are a bit mental. Some of them I wouldn't dare read out in daytime radio. I'm 38 years of age, male, in a relationship with a woman. She's 36 and wants kids. We're very happy, but sometimes I feel there is not enough of a spark. Should I leave for something stronger, or is this my lot? I do love her. Okay, so this is a question that comes up time and time again. That, you know, I suppose the honeymoon period, they call it, where people have that, the butterflies and the spark and everything else, and things are great and the bedroom is great and everything is wonderful. And then, you know, relationships settle, right? And they wonder, oh, is that it? So should I go off and find another one now? I mean, is that just the way relationships work?
Yes. In short, yeah, I mean, you know, that passion, those feelings of passion, they dissipate. Our bodies are designed to adapt to things. And so, you know, people will say, I keep falling out of love. And you're not actually falling out of love. Your love is transforming. It's shifting more from the passionate side to the best friend side of love. And so what I would say to this person is, you know, the good news is that spark that they're looking for, you can work on that. You can engage in what we call nice activities, things that are novel, interesting, challenging, and exciting. And we know from our own research that brings back the passion in relationships. Those parts about being happy and in love, that's the hard part. And when this person thinks about what they want from their relationship in 5 or 10 years, it's that best friend, happy, love part. If you had physical in 10 years, but not the friendship, you'd be even more miserable.
Mm. I've been seeing a guy for a year. We do everything together, but he refuses to put a label on it. Is this a red flag? Should I cut my losses now? Yeah, these people who just won't admit, you know, I had a friend, and, you know, and she was kind of dating people online and stuff like that. And every time I talked to her, I'd say, so, is it a thing? And she goes, what do you mean, is it a thing? And I go, well, I mean, you've been with him 5 or 6 weeks. I mean, is it a thing? Are you a couple? Or what's going on? So people just won't put a label on it. So she's been in this for a year. I've been seeing a guy for a year. And it's not a thing yet.
I mean, so, Niall, you're a guy. In guy speak, what is this guy telling her?
He's telling her that she's basically a booty call.
Yep, exactly, right? You know, she's in a situationship that, you know, this isn't a relationship. This is, you know, something that this guy wants. He's not showing relationship intent. This basically, he's telling you how he feels, but you're not wanting to listen and hear what he's actually saying. But this is not, you know, we always encourage people to have what we call love vision, where it's like, have a plan for the kind of partner, the kind of relationship you want before you get involved, so you can go back to that and see if it matches. This is not the type of relationship I'd imagine she'd want to find herself in.
So is she a booty call? She is, isn't she?
Probably. Yeah, I mean, he's at least not in this for, he's not in this for the long term, right?
No. He's in this for the convenience, yeah.
Yeah, because if he felt about her the way she feels about him, he'd have no problem committing.
Okay, here's an interesting one. I have a new boyfriend. He has an interesting and very active sexual past. How do I ask him to take a test without being rude?
Well, I think this is one of those times when you want to remember in your relationship that it's not you against your partner. You are both on the same team. So if I was to approach this with my partner, I would suggest not that you need to take a test, that like, hey, you know, we're kind of moving our relationship in this new phase. Why don't we both get a test together so we can both have peace of mind?
Hmm. Okay. And by the way, there was an interesting topic that we ran on the air last night. We had callers calling in that somebody had sent us in an email, and maybe I just get your view on this. So in the email, this guy had said he was married for 15 years. He previously had a girlfriend for 6 years, going back when he was younger. Hadn't seen her in 17 or 18 years, and just kind of thought about her, he said, because we fell out very amicably. We just fell out of love. You know, we grew up and grew apart. But he's happily married, said he loves his wife. He's got two kids. And he said, I just happened to look her up on Facebook, the old girlfriend, just to see how she was. Send her a quick message. She's married now with two kids as well. And he said to his wife, I'd be interested in meeting her for a coffee. And his wife went spare.
Okay.
She wasn't happy about this at all. Right. So who's being unreasonable? Is she being unreasonable by not letting him or not wanting him to do that? Or is he being unreasonable by even thinking about hooking up with an ex-girlfriend for a coffee?
That's a great question. I mean, I think her reaction in that situation is perfectly reasonable, because it's you get jealous when you care about losing something you value. And so that it's showing that she values her partner and doesn't want to lose him. Preventing him saying that he's not allowed to, I mean, you'd want to have more trust in your relationship than that. I'd also say, I don't know why he's going down this path. Like, you know, when you're on a diet, you don't hang out in a bakery, right? And so, like, he's tempting himself with something that it's probably not a good idea to tempt yourself with. Like, if you're happily married and everything's going great in your relationship, like, what's the possible upside from that encounter with that old flame?
That's what I said last night. Why would you even be thinking about looking her up? There's I felt
right.
You must have a problem in your marriage if you're looking up previous girlfriends. That's what I kind of thought on that one.
Yeah.
Hey, well,
like you're kind of dealing with a little regret.
Here's a little voice WhatsApp that just came in here. Hold on, let me play this one for you. This might be of interest.
Okay. Noel, I absolutely hate my mother-in-law.
Oh, wow.
I tolerate her, but I fucking hate her.
Oh,
my problem is, every day I see my wife turning into her.
No.
Should I run now or... play it out. What do you think?
I hope she doesn't recognize your voice. Okay, so he sees his wife turning into his mother-in-law, and he hates his mother-in-law. What should he do?
That's tough. I mean, I think you have to decide in these situations, like, how important is it? I would say, you know, the wife turning into mother-in-law, it could be a little bit that you're seeing things that aren't there, because we tend to recognize patterns, and maybe you're seeing a pattern that's not there. But if she really is kind of heading that direction, that's going to be tough to change, right? Because personality, it's hard to change. And like, she's had decades growing up with her mom, being around her mom. And so like, that's what's normal to your wife. And so it's going to be hard for her to be much different. And ideally,
she's going to turn into the mother-in-law. Is that what you're telling them? Yeah.
It's entirely likely. I mean, whether we like it or not, many of us, you know, take on characteristics of our parents, because that's how we were raised.
Yeah. How do I talk to my partner about starting an open marriage? Wow, that's becoming more common nowadays, isn't it?
It's becoming more common. I would say with this question of talking to your partner about an open relationship, you want to do this carefully. And I say that because you want to make sure the other person is genuinely receptive, or at least potentially open-minded to it. And it's not just something you want, that you're going to try to convince them of. And so your partner, to be even consider something like this, would be have to be someone who is highly secure in themselves, not jealous, no jealous tendencies, really, really, really good communicator, and someone who's very trusting. And they would have to have shown signs that this is something that they would entertain. If they don't have those characteristics, I would wonder why you would even try to broach the subject. And instead, you know, it might just be kinder to end the relationship and look elsewhere.
Okay. Is staying together for kids a good idea? Now, the person obviously hasn't given us the age of those children, so that's for the purpose of the question. Assume they're somewhere kind of the younger age group, between sort of 8 and 14 years of age. So is staying together for your kids a good idea?
Generally speaking, no. Because a lot of times when you're staying together, it means that there's problems in your marriage, there's problems in your relationship, you and your partner are probably engaged in a lot of conflict, a lot of fighting. And, you know, when you're doing all that stuff in front of your kids, you're basically teaching them what relationships are like. And so, you know, it's better to end a marriage in a respectful, mutual, highly communicating kind of way to show your kids, like, we still love each other. We're just not good for each other. And we're going to move on to find something different, because that's probably the kind of exact kind of behavior you would want your kid to display 20 years from now if they were in the same situation.
By the way, if anybody wants it, we've got 5 minutes left. If anybody wants to send us in a WhatsApp voice note, if you're brave enough, I know Irish people are quite under the counter about this. They're like airing their dirty laundry on the air. 087-188-0008. That's 087-188-0008. You can send us a WhatsApp voicemail. Here's one. How often should a couple be having sex in their 50s? Really? Okay, so I don't know why he said really at the end, in case you're going to spoof him, but whatever. is there a set amount of times? I don't think so, is there?
There is. Like, and I was going to say, like, this is like one of the most common questions people get, because it's an easy thing to count in relationships, so it's an easy way for people to kind of gauge the quality of their relationship, which everyone's fascinated by, right? And so a friend of mine has actually done research on this, and there's a magic number. And that magic number to kind of keep your relationship going strong is once a week.
Once a week.
And so as long... Once a week. You can have more sex than that in your relationship, more than once a week, but it doesn't give you any added benefit. Less than once a week, there is some...
Are you sure it doesn't give any added benefit? I can see lots of benefits to it. So if you go less than once a week, you're kind of heading into dodgy territory, are you?
That's exactly right. And, you know, the one other thing I would say about sex that's important for people to hear is, like, sex is an outcome of a good relationship. Like, you can't have more sex to make your relationship better. Like, that's not how it works. If your relationship is falling short in the sex department, work hard to have a better relationship. Support your partner more. Have more communication. That will translate over into the bedroom.
Absolutely, because as I said years and years ago to the CEO of Viagra, when they asked him, was he going to make a female version of Viagra, he said, unfortunately, it would be too complicated because it would have to come with a bunch of flowers and a box of chocolates. So in other words, the point is there's more to sex than just, you know, the physical aspect of it. It's the emotional aspect of it as well. Somebody says, I was in a relationship with an ego sociopath. This led me to Buddhism. Now I don't need a relationship. Is this wrong? That's a bit complicated, isn't it?
No, I mean, you know, it's like, so, you know, humans are social creatures. And so, you know, we think that means we need to pair bond and have romantic relationships. But you don't necessarily need romantic relationships. You just need relationships with other people. And so there are many people who are happily single, and that's no problem at all.
Okay. I'm with a man, but I like watching lesbian porn. What does that mean? Oh, okay. Okay, that's probably quite common with men and women that they watch same sex porn or whatever it is. Probably more so in relation to watching females, but I would imagine that's quite a common question, is it?
Yeah, it means that, you know, our sexuality is fluid. You know, we're not in perfect categories about who we like and what we like to do and what turns us on. You know, there's a continuum. And so, you know, you're just finding yourself at different parts of the continuum at different times.
Okay. You've no idea how many questions are coming in here. It's just getting ridiculous at this stage. But I'm going to keep you now for another 5 minutes. And I'm happy to have you stay with me if you're happy to stay with me for 5 more minutes. I'm with my husband 6 years, only married 1.5. We've never had sex. He says he fancies me, but nothing ever happens, even though I've tried to get things going in the bedroom. I feel like we're just best friends. So they're married 1.5 years, and they're not having sex.
That's odd, right? I mean, like, you are best friends, you know, so if you're best friends, that's great. But, you know, as much as the passion side of things is one of the lesser important components, it's an essential component of a romantic relationship for nearly everybody. And so that's something you probably want to get sorted out.
Unless you're both happy with the arrangement of not having sex, of course.
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If you're both happy with that arrangement, then, you know, there are certainly marriages that exist in that fashion.
Yeah.
But if you're unhappy with it, then, you know, I think you want to You don't want this 1.5 years to turn into 10.5 years.
No, celibacy doesn't work well, unless you're a Catholic priest. Okay, now it says, hi, my husband of 20 years recently left. He said he can forget difficult stuff that happened in our marriage over the years. I love him dearly, and I know he still cares. Do I keep my distance and let him work through what he's going through, or for him, and hope he comes back again? So, in other words, should she keep at him to try and, does she keep working at it, or should she just, look, off you go. You go work it out and come back to me when you're ready.
I would say, you know, my advice in these situations to folks is to stay still. And what I mean by that is don't chase after them, because if you chase after them and they come back, now you don't know if they only came back because you chased after them.
Oh, I get you.
You don't have to run away and you don't have to run away and distance yourself, right? Because that's probably not what you really want. So just kind of stay still. Let them work it out. You know, the second half of that question, though, like, should I just wait around? I don't know if you want to wait around. So, you know, in that time when you're staying still, focus on yourself, focus on, you know, doing some things to improve yourself, focus on, you know, I mentioned earlier before, like those dual intent activities, like go take some classes, you know, be open to meeting other people. Don't plan on, you know, your partner coming back, because there's a good chance that they won't.
My relationship broke up in 2019, but he stayed friends with benefits for 2 years. And then I found out he moved on with someone else and was living two different lives for a year. It's been 9 months and I can't get past being lied to for so long. And then she sent another message to him with a big angry face saying, I'm so angry. Okay. It's obviously only recently it's happened. So
yes.
So he was kind of cheating, so to speak, but he was cheating on his new partner, obviously, for 2 years and using her as a booty call.
Yeah, I mean, you have every right to be angry, right? You should be angry. The main thing, though, is don't be angry with yourself, right? This is not your fault. This is not, you know, you were doing the right thing by trusting somebody and trying to be open to a relationship. It was a partner problem, not a you problem. And so don't carry this forward into your future relationship and punish future partners for your past partner's mistakes.
Okay, I'll give you one final one because we really need to let you go. I fancy my friend's, my wife's friend. She is always around our house. My feelings are growing. What do? I don't want to ruin my marriage. That's an awkward one, isn't it?
Stop.
Stop.
I mean, there's no other solution to that than just, you cannot go there, you cannot do
you
that.
You can't even say that to your wife, listen, don't invite your friend around anymore. I've got a bit of a thing
exactly,
for her.
Right? You've got to deal with this on your own and, you know, kind of man up and figure it out. Like, and just, you know, if you really think that there's any chance that you're going to pursue it, then you have to do the honorable thing and end your primary relationship with your wife. Right?
Friend might not even be interested in him anyway, because she's not going to want to piss off the wife either. You know what I mean? So he could end up with nobody.
That's a really good point, Niall. And, you know, most of the time, guys are very sensitive to women, a female's interest. So guys will see romantic interest where there is none. So it is highly, highly likely this woman doesn't like this guy at all.
It's really, I always find that really interesting, right? Women are very different to men. If a woman says hello to a guy, he thinks she fancies him. Whereas, you know, women accept guys saying hello to them all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, women have a very hard time knowing when guys really like them. And guys think every woman likes them, right? Exactly like you said. Somebody says hi, like gives a little smile, and like, oh yeah.
She likes
really
me.
Interested. And, yeah. You know,
she thinks I'm hot.
Chances are his wife's friend has no interest in him whatsoever and is just being polite.
By the way, don't forget, Gary has done a TED Talk as well. Have a quick listen to this.
When you think back on your life, when you're 95, 100 years old, and you look back over the course of your lifetime, you're not going to think, I wish I owned a better phone. I wish I spent more time on the internet. I wish I spent more time at work or sleeping. It's not going to be any of those kinds of things. It's going to be, I wish I spent more time with the people I love. Because our relationships, they build us, they define us, they sustain us, and they can break us too.
Well, listen, Gary, I got to thank you for coming on. By the way, if people want to grab a copy of your book, Stronger Than You Think, which I'm assuming is available at all the usual outlets online, or they can catch up with your TED Talks, which is called Breakups Don't Have to Leave You Broken.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show.